players to the game of the new world order. Don't be caught unaware when the heads start rolling. No, it couldn't happen here. I know it wouldn't happen here.
Welcome to the October 2nd edition of Double Cross Radio, coming to you live from the state of Jefferson, or the Jefferson Republic. My name is Chuck Horton. I'm joined tonight by my co-host, Drew Lamb. Drew, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing really great, Chuck. Thanks.
Okay, Drew's been...
had a really busy afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that my fish were not very hungry, and so... I decided to test my water levels and see what was going on. I noticed that my pump seemed a little sluggish today, and I had an explosion in nitrite levels. And it was because my pump wasn't moving enough water through the biofiltration system. And so I literally just finished pulling the main pump, rebuilding it, reinstalling it, and firing up the entire system again, and just came skidding in for this show. But the pump's running right now. And hopefully the fish will be happy. So
yeah. So for those of you who don't know that may be listening tonight for the first time, Drew has a second show on the UC Wide Network called Off Grid Journey on Sundays. From time to time, he talks about his adventures with aquaponics and the potential and the possibilities that are possible with that. And you guys should tune into his show.
Thanks, Chuck. And I have a great show planned this Sunday. I did a pre-recorded interview with Murray Hallam from Practical Aquaponics of Australia. And so I'm really looking forward to that. I've been trying to line up Murray for about 3 months. And I just got an email from him out of the blue saying he wanted to come on. And he's like the aquaponics guru. So if you want to learn how to do this, check out his stuff, Practical Aquaponics. You can find him on the web or on Facebook. And he's got some awesome DVDs and he has kits and plans, and his stuff is all state-of-the-art. So we're going to talk about that this Sunday.
That sounds great. Okay, well, we're going to get on with the show here. We have tonight joining us from, I think it's Mesquite, Nevada, or it's Bunkerville, or anyway, the Bundy Ranch, is Cliven Bundy, and he is going to bring us up to date on the state of affairs with his situation regarding the BLM and the public lands that the government claims to have authority over, and it's really not really true, and kind of how that situation is going. And so I don't want to spend all of our time talking about him when he can be telling us this thing live. So Cliven, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. And, hello, America. Happy to be here with you tonight. And what I'm wondering, though, is does your partner have any endangered fish in that pond he's got? You know, those endangered fish rules almost.
I'm worried there might be some spotted bass in there.
You better watch out because you're in trouble.
Oh, boy. Yeah, like I had to ask permission to get these fish over here. It took a long time to get permission, and they made me do a bunch of stuff. You know, slaves can't grow their own food in this country.
So, how many environmental impact studies did you have to go through?
It was ridiculous. I had to pay them money and beg and negotiate, and and then they said, "Yeah, you could have tanks with fish in them."
What was the mitigation fee? So you have
Yeah, we've run into that too with some other stuff. My family's property for wetlands. I had to negotiate a wetland mitigation. So yeah, and this is on private property. It's outrageous.
This is what's happening to our property rights in America. This is one of the most serious things. We're joking about it here, but it really is taking away our property rights and destroying our ability to build and improve and prosper. You know, this is a big problem.
It really is, and it's probably not being felt as deeply as it should be. There's probably only the people like yourself and Drew who are actually trying to produce something in this country are the ones that are feeling the pain. Too many of us in this country are living off the fake prosperity from the United States being the world's trading currency, the dollar, and so they get to live a higher standard of living than they're entitled to, really, because they're not really producing anything but paper dollars. And that day is coming to an end sometime in the near future, and that is going to be a real rude awakening to people. They're going to wake up and say, well, why can't we do this here? And they'll realize that we don't have the capacity to produce stuff anymore.
Here on Bundy Ranch, we've got to go back 20 years ago, but all of these problems came from the Endangered Species Act and involving the desert tortoise. And now they've eliminated most of my neighbors. In fact, they've eliminated a lot of ranchers across the Mojave Desert into California and Nevada and Arizona. And, of course, they have a lot of other species besides the desert tortoise that's causing the rancher. And not only the rancher, it costs the people lots of money in the mitigation fees for roads and, pipelines, easements, all of these type of things. They're very expensive. And the environmental group and the politicians have learned how to make money, and big money, off these things.
Yeah, there's several years ago, Congressman Richard Pombo of California, and along with Joseph Farah, who's the person that started WorldNet Daily, they wrote a book called This Land is Our Land, and it was about the war on private property. And this is an excellent book. I don't think it's in public anymore. I think that you can get it used on Amazon, though. It's still available and it's still around. For those of you who don't really understand how long ago this all started, it started with guys like O.C. Meals getting thrown in prison for dumping sand on his own land. And they declared it was a wetland, and it wasn't. It was just, they just used the laws arbitrarily to punish him because he had, he'd embarrassed some local official that worked in that department, so they wanted to get back at him, and that's what they did. They used the government to put him in prison. This is, it's horrible. Anyway, we want to talk about Clive and Bundy tonight, not about O.C. Mills. And
this subject's pretty close to me. You know, when we talk about families suffering and individuals suffering and their property rights suffering, you know, here in Clark County, there was 52 ranchers, was my neighbor, and I'm the last man standing. But what happened to those 52 families, what happened to the economy that they was creating and the commerce? They was producing something for America to eat, and now those people are gone. And, that's all because of these regulations and over-regulating. And most of it came from the Endangered Species Act.
Well, that gave him the sledgehammer, I think, to go after you guys. But it's they were looking for any way they could to manipulate the situation into their advantage for that. And however they did it, and in your case, the Endangered Species Act was it. They used Endangered Species Act in Oregon to shut down the forest to logging. We lost a huge industry here. We produced timber for the whole nation and shipped a lot of it overseas too, out of the state of Oregon. And there's hardly any timber coming out of here anymore. So it's not just cattle ranchers and Nevada people, it's everywhere. They're using it to stop industry and expansion and development in every state in the union. So, Clavin, to start off here, I think it'd be good if you could give everybody kind of a history of the situation that developed this last spring at your ranch and kind of came to a head in April, in April 12th, the standoff, and kind of go through some of the events that led up to that, everything that happened, and then we can start maybe digging a little deeper into some of the reasons why you're resisting, and I think they're very legitimate reasons. They're reasons that everybody should be paying attention to. But could you start with that and give us the bird's eye view?
Yeah, let me give you a little background here. You know, I live in the United States of America and the state of Nevada, the county of Clark County, and I live in the south eastern part of the state of Nevada. It's where my ranch is. It's just north of Lake Mead and just northeast of Las Vegas, Nevada, about 80 miles. So that gives everybody a little bit of an idea where I'm at. I'm a rancher here, and my family's been here in this valley along the Virgin River, which is one of the flows into the Lake Mead and on down into the Colorado River system. And my family's been here ever since 1877. In fact, January 7th, 1877, they moved in here. And when they came by horse and wagon. And when they arrived here in this valley, what did they need? They, you know, they had a horse that was tired and hot. And so they unbuckled this harness on that horse and took him over and gave him a drink of water. And when that horse drank that first sip of water, he started to make beneficial use of a renewable resource. And that's where the property right began for the stock water. And, of course, then the horse needed something to eat. They didn't have a bale of hay or a sack of grain in that wagon. So they took him up the wash, and as soon as he bit the first bite of grass or the first nip of brush, he started to create a beneficial use of a renewable resource and began to create a property right, a first property right for that pioneer. And that's sort of how my rights began, you know, about 137 years ago.
Okay, now, these rights, they're not just rights that you have during your lifetime. They're rights that are transferred from generation to generation, from one party to another party through a sale, like any other property that you would have, like a house in a subdivision or...
Sure, it's real property. It's bought and sold or inherited. You know, I claim I get my grazing rights, either I've inherited them or I've bought them. And, you know, when I say I bought them, I've purchased them from somebody else that had those grazing rights. Now, my grazing rights, I could sell those to you, just like if I was going to sell my house, and then you'd own those that property right. It's real property, it's taxable, and it's sellable.
Yeah, so the great economist Walter Williams once said, you can tell if you own something or not, just try and sell it. And if you can sell it, you own it.
Well, sure.
And that's pretty simple. That's a pretty simple way to make that determination. So it's there's no question since you bought it that you own it, and you could sell it, you own it. In fact, the government has even admitted that. Didn't they make you an offer for those rights?
Well, they have bought rights before, yes. And they bought some of my neighbor's rights also. So those rights are real property.
And by making those offers, they admit to that fact. So that's not disputed.
Well, sure, but what they want to claim is they do not recognize Nevada as a state. They want to claim Nevada as a territory, and then they want to claim they own the land. And if it is a territory, and the United States does own that land, then they have unlimited power. As a territory in Article 4 and 3, Congress would have unlimited power to make all rules and regulations. And that's what they try to treat us here in the West. They want to treat us like that we are only a territory. But we're not. We're a admitted state, and we, the people of the state of Nevada, owns this land, and I own some rights on this land. I own several kinds of rights. I own the grass. I own the livestock water, and I own access to the land, and I own range improvements like crails and water troughs and things like that. But then there's one other thing I own. I own the right, the same as the other people in Clark County do, has, to have access to hunt, fish, camp, picnic, all of these things. Those rights belong to we, the people. And I do not own those rights. In other words, I couldn't charge you to come and camp on my ranch. That's your property, and that's your privilege as a citizen of Clark County, Nevada.
Okay, so that kind of spills. I hope that everybody is listening understands that. One of the people here is kind of getting ahead of things. He's want to know how much federal land your cattle graze on. I said none. This land belongs to Nevada, and that's truth.
Yeah, that's true. Let me step in here just a second. That's very true. I do not graze my cattle on federal or United States property. And that's where you probably heard I say the federal court. Well, here's what they say. Bundy, you don't believe in federal government? Sure, I believe in a federal government. You don't believe that the court has jurisdiction in Nevada? Yes, I believe court has jurisdiction in Nevada, but not over this subject. They do not have jurisdiction over the land, which belongs to the state of Nevada. The water belongs to the state of Nevada, and I have the preemptive rights created, and I own that water under state law. My grazing rights come under state law. My road law in Nevada is very good. I believe in the Nevada state road law. And I also believe that the state of Nevada has jurisdiction and authority. But the main jurisdiction and authority I believe in is our county sheriff. He is the man that has constitutional jurisdiction and authority, a policing power and arresting power. And he's the only man in the United States that has that power here in this county.
Yeah, and he kind of let you down a little bit.
Yeah, he's been a little bit hiding under the table, but that's all right. His responsibility is still there, and I believe our Constitution still makes him accountable, and it is his duty to protect our life, liberty, and property. That's what he's supposed to do.
Yep, I agree with you 100%, and that's why we were very vocal supporters of you in April when all this was happening, and this is exactly why, because this is your property. It's the same. This is no different than a government agent's coming into your house and saying, well, we think this money you have laying on the table came from a drug transaction. We're taking it. And they didn't have any right to enter your house without your permission. They didn't have any warrant to or any reason to believe that you were involved in drug transactions. They just come in and do it. That's basically what they're doing. They're just saying, we're doing this, and because we're doing it, we have the right to do it. And that there's no right to do this. They have made it up out of thin air.
It's sort of hard to understand how United States government, and I don't want to make this sound like United States government is totally corrupt, because I pledge allegiance to this land, this flag. But what's happening here is we have bureaucracies that have become powerful, and they have almost become the king. And in my case, you see the Park Service and the BLM actually have an army, a SWAT team, and they came and actually stuck those guns down, me as a rancher and we the people's throat. And, that's where things really got out of hand.
Yeah, now, I think that you started to say something here, and I think you're being a gentleman about this. They had sniper rifles trained on you and your family for several days in a row. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I can back up a little bit. The standoff was on April 12th. Let's go back a few days. Let's go back, say, 10 days. Around my ranch is my home, and the center of the ranch there is sort of like a wagon wheel. I'm in the center of my ranch, and then I have private property here with water and, you know, pasture, and I raise hay and feed and things here on this farm. And then my ranch, my cattle graze out all directions, like out on the wagon spokes, out different directions. Well, for about 10 days, the BLM, or the federal government agents, let's call them federal agents, they had snipers around on the hills of my home, and high-powered communication, where I imagine they could even hear my us talk here in our house. And those, and then they had all the roads and all access to the all of the public land around was all closed off. And then they even was going further than that. They even created, I call them little pig pens, but they had little red fenced areas in, and it was small, you know, about the size of a room. And they had a First Amendment area here. In other words, that was where we're supposed to be able to exercise the First Amendment. And then, of course, they had contract cowboys hired. They had, you know, their trucks and their trailers and their trails and their helicopters and their dogs. And they were contract cowboy in the West. It's a dirty word. But these people were contracted to the United, with the United States government to come and destroy my ranch, steal my cattle, and all in the name of I don't know what. I guess you could, you'd say all in the name that the federal government was going to prove that they were the central government with unlimited power. And they had no respect for the sovereign state of Nevada, had no respect for Nevada law, had no respect for Nevada land, no respect for the Clark County Sheriff. And they was going to prove to the people of the United States and the world that they had unlimited power, and they could do any darn thing they wanted. And they come with their army to prove that.
Yeah. I just make one little point here, too, that a lot of people don't realize that the act of pointing a loaded weapon at somebody is considered assault in the criminal code. And so those people are guilty of a crime right there, because this is it's if you threaten somebody verbally, that's an assault. When you carry out your threats, that's a battery. And so, you know, technically these all, they had already, before this stand down happened, they'd already committed some crimes, but nobody chose to prosecute those. That's, again, the sheriff and the district attorney let you down.
The state of Nevada let me down, and also the Clark County. Well, Clark County did, but definitely Clark County sheriff. The governor of Nevada or the sheriff could have stopped this action probably 2 months before it ever happened, by just recognizing the Constitution and state sovereignty. They wouldn't have had to go any further than just those, just the issue of, hey, this is the state of Nevada, and no, you're not going to treat our citizen like this. You're not going to steal his property like this. You're not going to destroy his property. And you're not going to treat our citizens like this. You know, all they would have had to say is no. I really believe that they have proper jurisdiction and authority, and I actually believe that the federal agents and the government would respect them if they would actually say no.
Yeah, there's actually been other counties in the West. I think up in Northern California, there's a sheriff in a county where I don't know if it was the BLM or the Forest Service came into his office, and they had a bunch of regulations for they wanted to enact for the public lands there, and the sheriff looked at the regulations. He looked up at him, and he said, "Boys, you got one problem." And they said, "What?" He said, "You didn't bring enough guns." And he tore it up and threw it in the garbage can. And so, you know, that's, I guess, you know, they decided, well, we'll just come back another time. Maybe that's when they decided they need more armed personnel or something. They needed a small army.
They came with lots of guns here. I estimated they probably was 200 armed agents with high-powered military type arms, and they was fully dressed, and they were pointing those guns to kill.
Yeah, and I want to also point out something. I followed the situation really closely as it was happening. It was being reported on Alex Jones quite a bit, and I listened to his show, and I was also reading the accounts that were from news sources that I trusted, and I go back after the fact, and I've read Wikipedia, and it looks like someone has gone in there and just put in a total propaganda piece. Most of the stuff in Wikipedia is, you call them half-truths at best. It's not at all what's going on. They say there were 25 armed people. You just heard, he said there were around 200. And they said they didn't have on things like body armor and stuff like that because they didn't want it to be, they said it would be provocative. They had high-powered military rifles, like elephant gun type stuff. They had military garb, camo. They would look like a military unit. Whether they had body armor on is immaterial. They were plenty provocative as they were. In fact, there are several incidents.
Don't let me disturb you here. But what I want to pitch, you're painting a picture, and I want to, you know, there's lots of video, lots of a film with this action. You know, that was one of the things that was happening. We had, you know, a media. We had a lot of people with cameras. And what happened here is not no secret. But, you know, one thing was interesting to me when I looked at it and seen what was going on here. You have this army, this military dress, and this force. And you know, in most of the pictures on the media, you only see three or four vehicles and about 20 men. But if you get a broader view of the picture, you will start seeing those vehicles that were backing those four or five vehicles up, and you can see them as far way up through the bush behind them. You know, several hundred yards, you can see these vehicles and men. And then picture I wanted to draw here is you've got an army here with all of this high-powered guns and armor. And then on the other side of the fence, I want you to look there, and I want you to see these people on, most of them were on foot, and then we had some horses, and we did not have no guns. I'm not saying there wasn't guns there. They could have been a half a dozen people that had sidearms. There was no guns pointing. And I want to draw, so that's the two sides. You got the army and the people are basically unarmed. And then what I want to point out, who was carrying the American flag? You can see this army, and I mean, it looks just like you're in a war zone. They do not have no American flag. There's nothing looking like America. And you look back the other way, and there's, I don't know how many, but let's say 30, 40 flags and people, you know, dressed with representing the United States and the flags are flowing. You know, what I'm saying is look at the difference of what's happened there. You got an impressive government that's putting their guns down, we the people, and we the people here basically celebrating being American and standing for freedom and liberty.
Yeah, and I want to point out to the people there, one of those guys holding the flag out there, that was a pretty good-sized flag, and he was holding it out like he was in an iron crowd. That guy had to be a stud. I mean, those things are not light, and he was just holding it out there like it was nothing. That was a really strong dude. I don't know who that was, but he would have my respect just from being able to do that. That's something I don't think I'd ever be able to do in my entire life. That's the kind of guys these are. They're hardworking people. They're not out there getting a government handout. They're ranchers. They're cowboys. They earn a living producing something that serves other people. What other higher calling can there be?
Let me tell you what these ranchers do here in the West. You know, we run our cattle on this whole desert range, which is sort of the toughest country in the world. But what we have out here is we do have vegetation that is good. And when I'm saying it's good vegetation, it makes good food. But you know, man can't eat this brush and grass out around these rocks and cactus. But cattle gather this up. And what we do is we use this, our cattle eat this renewable resource, and they drink this renewable resource in water, and they create a food, a commodity that's edible. And this edible commodity is red meat, makes good steak. It's good. And that's what we do here in the West. And that's what cowboys, real cowboys are doing. They're producing food for America.
Yeah. And even when the cows are pooping out the waste products, they're providing food and an environment for those endangered tortoises.
Well, they're, yeah, the, you know, manure that the cow puts out is enhancing all the vegetation, all of the you know, micro germ affair, and you know, and the small bugs and insects, and that is increasing the life for the, say, the birds and all other animals. Everything is thrives on organic. In other words, if you got something eating this coarse browse and brush and digesting it and putting it back on, into the earth, it makes everything better. And that's what's happened. There's a cycle going on here. And when that cycle, the better and the more you use this Western lands, the greater the cycle is, the better the cycle is, and the more organic matter is being used, and the more movement of the soil, and the pruning of the plants, and the fire resist, you know, the cattle are helping eating the dry green, dry grass that causes the fire, and the and keeping the fire load down. It's called energy, you know, the fire load.
Yeah, they reduce the fuel load.
The fuel, that's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah, the fuel. And anytime you reduce that fuel and you turn that fuel into red meat, you're doing some good for this country.
You certainly are. And it's, if you guys really listen to Cliven's words there, and this is what a real environmentalist sounds like. I mean, he understands that there's an ecosystem and that the cows are a part of it, and it's working, and it works very well. And interference in it is going to disrupt it and make it work not so well. Not just my logical thinking there, I guess.
And then, you know, it's actually a shame when I drive in the last week. I mean, to give you an idea, I've traveled from the almost the Mexican border up through Arizona and Nevada all the way to the Oregon-Idaho line. I've been in that area in the last, you know, last 10 days. And, you know, I have seen very few cattle. What's happening to this desert now? It used to have a lot of cattle, and now this desert is being overgrown with the brush. It's like a rose bush. If you don't trim the rose bush, you don't produce any beautiful flowers, and that's what's happening to this the desert here in the West. We're not pruning the bush. We're not eating the grass off, and it's either burning or it's getting old and tough woody plants, and it's not as good a it's not as good as feed. It's not as good a ranch. It's not the renewable resource is not being renewed. And that's what's happening to most of the West.
Yes. And this phony environmental cause that they use, do they just go out and they look for some reason that they can use to pull the wool over people's eyes, kind of load them up with a bunch of propaganda to use that, you know, to raise public indignation over these poor animals that are going to be deprived of their environment, when actually the cattle are providing a better environment for their survival? And when it came right down to it, didn't the Forest Service or the BLM, they had a tortoise sanctuary, and they finally gave up on it and just went and euthanized all the tortoises that were in there. So they don't really care about the tortoise.
You know, that, let me go through this just a little bit. That's happening right here, you know, right in my county here. And this, you know, started 20 years ago, and they started to put these tortoises, you know, like I say, put them in jail. But what it was you know, they had a couple of sections that they'd fenced off, and they're going to make collect these tortoises. Well, they started to collect thousands of them, and so now we come down the road to 20 years from now. Let's say they, you know, and then now they say they only have 1,400 tortoises, and they need to euthanate. And then they'll be done with their tortoise program. Well, what happened to all those thousands of tortoises they put in there? Well, what happened to them? They killed those tortoises. And now they've gone down to the last 1,400, and they're going to kill them. But let me tell you what the difference is. On my ranch, which we run over, say, over 100,000 acres, on my ranch in my lifetime, I've seen one tortoise that's been killed from he fell off a ledge and fell down on the road and broke his shell, and he was dead. That's the only tortoise in my lifetime that I've seen dead on my ranch that's been killed from someone. I've never seen one run over. I've never seen one hurt by a cow, and yet they've killed tens of thousands of them. And not only that, we pay them to do that. We the people pay them to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. Well, moving on, because I don't want to – there's more we could talk about all the resources there in the desert that are – they're gone unused. There's mineral wealth there. There's this used to be an inland sea, and there's a lot of mineral deposits that are there from the sea. Like I know in parts of California, they used to mine gypsum. I think there's probably gypsum in the Nevada area too. Plus, there's probably gold and silver around there in some places. But all that is kind of forbidden. They don't want anybody making a living out there on that land. They want people off of it, it seems like. And so that's all gone. And this is really part of a bigger problem. There's you have these property rights, and they're rights that have existed since the first man came into that valley in 1877. And they're rights to use certain resources, and they're owned just like any property that you'd own, just like you own your smartphone or you own your computer or you own your car. These are the same thing. There's no difference. And these rights are being transferred without a sale they're making the rights, they're reducing the value of those rights by restricting the use on this property. And that's a taking. And by the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, you can't take someone's property without just compensation. Well, by denying him use of this property, he's had some of the value of his property taken from him, because those property rights, as he already established, the government has already acknowledged that those are his property rights. They offered him money for it. They've offered his fellow 51 other ranchers money for those rights. So this is something where that value of that property is just vanishing because they won't allow use of that property right. So that is a horrible thing to do to people. And because it's only hurting maybe 52 families out of a whole nation, they say, oh, it's justified. That's just collateral damage. Some people just have to suffer so the rest of us can live what we want to live. Well, that's not how a free society should operate at all. People should have the right to be free, to have their property, and to try and pursue happiness. That's Jefferson's Declaration. That's just an awesome document. And this has been denied this man. So, continuing on, this wasn't the only destruction of property that happened. Those people that were there, they destroyed a lot of the improvements that you'd made. A lot of your cattle ended up missing. They were actually stealing your cattle.
They were several things happening here. You know, they had contract cowboys with helicopters, and they was going over this ranch trying to gather these cattle. And of course, it was hot and the rough country. They was abusing these cattle by running them and chasing them. And then if they had cattle that wouldn't say cooperate with them, they took and shot them. They was we got, like, for example, we had one bull that had 6 or 7 shots from a helicopter. In other words, shot him right down through his back. And then we had other kinds of destruction too. These people were sort of, I don't know how to express it. What kind of people would, let's say, come into your house and rob your house and save some money and then just kick the walls in? That's just the way they was treating my ranch. They come and was robbing my cattle, stealing my cattle. And then they wasn't happy with that. They wanted to ruin all of the structures. In other words, the water structures and things that I had built and my ancestors had built, my father had built. For years we had built these structures, and they were not only for cattle, they were for wildlife and cattle and domestic use also. And they literally destroyed them, and they would have continued on destroying them. They wanted to totally ruin this ranch to where it wasn't ranchable.
How many cattle ended up missing?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I figure probably around 50 head of cows. We had 27 head of dogie cows that lost their mother that we found all at once. And then, we, as time went on, we found dead cattle and dead calves. So I don't know, at least 50 cows and more. We found one mass grave where they dug a grave with a backhoe. And we got, you know, just sort of rumor. We got a rumor from a shooter in a helicopter said there was at least four more mass graves. So we never did find those mass graves. So I don't know how many cattle we lost for sure.
Yeah. And additionally, I kind of lost my train of thought. I had another question lined up. That happens when you get older. The other things that happened there, like I said, they destroyed the water troughs that were bringing water to other things. But there was a confrontation with some of your family and some of your friends and supporters with these people as they were bringing their backhoe and a dump truck off of one of the areas where they had been out doing whatever they were doing. And there's a confrontation there. I believe, was it your son that was tasered three times?
Yes, I had one son that had been tasered, and I had a sister that they threw her down on the ground and raised up her up. And then there was others. There was I had a daughter that they'd hassled, and then I had another son that just a couple of days before that tasing that they had threw to the ground and really roughed him up and put him in prison overnight in jail and really roughed the kid up bad. And then, of course, there was some other people that wasn't part of my family that they had roughed up also. And so they was sort of pretty just acting like a bunch of thugs, I guess, just having fun, destroying things, it just seemed like. And they didn't mind hurting people while I was in the process.
Yes, and This is why we don't want these people militarized. Well, we don't want them carrying all these weapons and having all this kind of quasi-military equipment, because it, when you have when the only weapon you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and so they just can't wait to use it. They want to use it, and they think it's safe, and it isn't safe. And I watched that video of your son being tased three times, and he's quite a man. Also, every time they'd tase him, he was just tearing it out. And that causes cuts and bleeding, and it's very painful. And he did that three times, and he must have been hurting a little bit that night.
Well, and he was having to fight a couple of dogs off while he was doing that. So he did a good job for us of being brave and having strength enough to go through this. I think the good Lord must have been with him to help him. And anyway, yeah, he's okay, but that was quite a fight.
And one of the people here in chat said there wasn't a single picture of the alleged slaughtered cattle. I have to say that's not true. I saw a picture of the mass grave when you guys found the one. And as you and Jinx, as you heard Cliven say, they never found the other four alleged mass graves. So they look, they probably, this is a big area, and they probably don't have time to go out there just to look for that. But they're missing a lot of cattle, so they don't, that's the bottom line. And those cattle are probably worth a couple $1,000 a piece.
Yes, they are now. Cattle are worth a lot of money. They're worth at least that much, yes.
So 50 cattle is easily $10,000. Excuse me. That's wrong.
$100,000. $100,000, yeah.
Yeah, that's a wad of bills, $100,000.
Yeah, it so is. And they destroyed probably at least another $100,000 worth of equipment. And I still haven't got the waters fixed and, the water back to the wildlife and livestock in some areas.
Yeah, and all this has happened and no one has been held accountable. And there's a county sheriff. He's still there. He's not doing his job. There are crimes that are committed against your property. You had people pointing loaded weapons, high-powered hunting rifles at your family for several days. That's assault. You had people that were destroying your property. That's vandalism, if nothing else. You had people that had acts of aggression. These people are not sworn police. These are just federal employees. They had acts of aggression against men and women who weren't armed. The woman that was thrown to the ground, I believe she was recovering from cancer treatments.
She just had a couple of years of cancer. She wasn't really that healthy of a woman.
Yeah, and besides, she was a woman, guys. I mean, geez, you just don't do that. And so there's a lot of crimes that were committed that have just been kind of ignored because the sheriff doesn't have a spine. I that's my opinion. I think.
Yeah, it's interesting that they were, I think, about 30 people that filed criminal complaints in the county with the county attorney, you know, that happened just, you know, a week or so after the standoff. They've never processed those at all. So there's at least 30 criminal complaints there that's been filed that the county has never done anything with.
And that would be your district attorney's fault.
Well, sure. And then they, you know, the sheriff and also the BLM, they come out and say, well, there's criminal actions here. We're going to have, you know, they're going to charge we the people with criminal actions, and they're going to be accountable. But, you know, then I ask the question, who is a criminal here? You know, is it we the people, or were we the criminals, or was it the federal government with and their agencies, and even the county sheriff, and what about the state of Nevada? Who is the criminal here? Who actually is breaking the law, and who is doing the criminal acts? They are stealing cattle, breaking up equipment, pointing guns at we the people, and beating up we the people with tasers and all that. Who is the criminal here? That's a good question to ask. Who is the criminal there?
That's right. Well, if you define criminal action as destruction of property, stealing people's property, assault on people, battery, which is when assault is the threat, battery is the action. There were both assault and battery going on. There was false arrest. There's a lot of crimes committed, or according to our code of justice, these were crimes. But I guess if you have political power, those don't always get enforced evenly. But the biggest thing I think is the loss in value of your property rights by not allowing you to use the property. That is a huge loss, and I think that the BLM is fiscally responsible for their mismanagement practices that have caused this loss to you and your property. And that's the takings. By the Fifth Amendment, you have to be justly compensated by that. And I know that this has gone up in the courts and people have lost, but I still think that those decisions were wrong because you have lost the value of that property through their actions.
What's really a shame here is the state of Nevada has lost their sovereignty. They never stood up for statehood. And you've got a federal government, you know, not paying any attention to our Constitution, claiming land and claiming jurisdiction, claiming policing power where they don't have it. And then we have a state of Nevada and a county sheriff that's not saying no to this action, basically allowing the federal government to come in and have that type of force and authority, which constitutionally there's no way in the world that they could possibly have this kind of authority. So what's sad here is that we have a state that's not responsible or standing for statehood, not standing up for the United States Constitution. We have a county sheriff that's not exercising his jurisdiction and authority and not standing up for the Constitution or state law. And so we got a lot of sad things going on here in America when it comes to property and property rights. And, you know, we the people. They want to put us on the bottom of the flagpole, but no, we the people are on top of the flagpole. We have sovereignty. That's why we fought the Revolutionary War and why we created the Constitution. So we would allow a federal government or any government to act like they are. We only allowed the federal government to have very little property in our Constitution. Restricts them to only a few things they can do, and one of those things they can't do is own land in a admitted state, only just very little land, and they can't have all of this jurisdiction, unlimited power. That is not constitutional, and we the people have got to straighten this out.
We absolutely do, and I also wanted to bring up another book that to me is just an absolute must read for anybody who's interested in being prosperous and understanding how capitalism really works. It's called The Mystery of Capital. It's by Hernando de Soto, and he's a Peruvian economist. And he was probably more famous for writing a book called The Other Path, which there was a group of communist rebels there a few years back, and they were called The Shining Path. And they were causing a lot of problems in Peru and spilling over into Chile and Ecuador and Bolivia. But he wrote this book called The Other Path, where he told people, instead of being destroying everything, you should work towards trying to reform to a capitalistic market, where there's going to be a free market, where there's going to be opportunity, and you'll have a chance to actually make a life, and you won't have to go out and kill people and destroy property to make your point, because you're not getting anywhere by doing that. And so he was really famous for that book. And he wrote this other one, The Mystery of Capital, where he was examining why capitalism works well in the Western world, mainly in the 19th century and early 20th century, why it had worked well. The only conclusion that could come to do not is that property rights were so protected by people from the property as secure and do their liberty. Value the equity in a home or land or whatever, or a factory, whatever, to invest in more and better production methods. They're able to become actually able to capital. You could be like Ray Kroc and start with a hamburger stand and end up called McDonald's, and you could end up being a multimillionaire in your lifetime in America. That used to happen all the time.
You know,
and that was a pretty rare.
Yeah, one of the sad things that in America, especially with us, not only with the youth, and it's when we get to the dream, when we can't dream of having a business and becoming a McDonald's, you know, or we can't dream we can be a rancher or a farmer. You know, we've got these young people to where there's no dreaming left. They don't seem like they're restricted with all the rules and regulations, and they're actually in a depression instead of being thriving and ready to go and do things. You need that back in America. That's called happiness. When we can dream, when we can do things, when we can take capitalist type government and know that we can have gain, we have profit, and we need to be able to build. And you know, it's so exciting to experiment and build and create. That's what man's supposed to do on this earth.
All right, Drew, do you remember that haiku that was in the book? Product, the result of serving your fellow man, or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, I can't put that for me.
That's exactly what profit is. Profit of dirty people's profit to get. Fellow man, and I can bring money to you if you don't have something they want.
Deciding is able to serve, you should be able to serve, and then serve is a little bit like tip. They tip a little bit, that's what you live on, that's you gain. If you don't serve good enough to get that tip, then you fit. And that's just fine in America too. Some of us have to fail, some of us have to gain and try to make it just even draw like a sort of a common social type system where we're all a subject and we supposed to all have people. Then no sense produce. We need to be able to take a chance, put it that way.
That's correct. And there's nothing wrong with failure. You're learning from your experience, and that's a positive thing. That I'm not going to do that again. And as long as you have that hope and dream in front of you, you can overcome failure easily. And there's many examples of people in this that went through lots of hardships. I don't want to hold up something that someone else isn't going to. So I'll go all the way back to Thomas Edison. How many times did he fail trying to invent a light bulb, and he finally succeeded? And he wasn't going to stop it. Time he failed, he learned something and made the next a little bit better. And that's just how it works in a free society. You have those failures and still come out triumphant. We've seen lost all those examples of free markets and how they produce more and more abundance. They produce greater abundance than any economic system ever been on this planet. And yet we seem to want to throw them away all the time and adopt the things that bring scarcity and poverty and despair.
This one thing that we're feeling here on Bundy Ranch right now, we're feeling some Native Americans we're feeling like that now we can go and produce something. And we are. We've produced a real nice crop of melons. And I've got, you know, my cattle are doing good. And we're producing good calves this year. And we're going to continue. And, you know, in my lifetime, probably this was the cattle market, things like they are. It's probably the first time in my life that we could actually make a profit and really feel like that we're thriving a little bit. And this is a good feeling. And this is what everybody in America needs to be able to do. Feel like they're thriving a little bit. We definitely are tired of being depressed and compressed by the federal government and so many laws and regulations, and we don't have any freedom. We need to be able to exercise agency. That's what we need to have, is a little bit of agency, each individual.
I'm getting close to the end of the show tonight, and I wanted to get this one quote. This is an exact quote. I tried to find the exact quote, and somehow it's been scrubbed. Drew may have it somewhere, but Russ means, once, this is kind of a paraphrase of the quote. He said, "One man denied freedom, we are all denied our freedom." And that's an absolute truth. Probably what they tried to describe it. I don't want people knowing that. If you allow something like this to happen, you'll stand up for Clive Bundy. You go and keep up to what's happening there. The next person's going to be, they're going to come for you. And they're going to have a precedent. They have to do that because no one objected to the previous abuse of power that had happened. So it's really important to know the fact about what happened, and Clive has done an awesome job tonight to the history of rights for that area, how those property rights came to be, his family's history of being there, and the events that led up to down on April 12th. This is an awesome listening to all this, and it really got me pumped up. I'm going to sleep tonight, and so personally, just like the Presbyterian minister of Germany, came for the Union workers, wasn't a Union worker, so didn't care. Then they came for the Presbyterians, didn't care. Then came the Catholics, and I didn't care. Came for being left to stand for me, and that's kind of how it's going to be. Just draw a line in the sand and say no more. It just has to stop.
gmail.com. All those probably take all the information. You know, I want to say one thing, you know, we're in the greatest land in the whole earth with an inspired constitution, a supreme law of the land. Let's pay attention to what our constitution says, and it'll solve most of our problems here in this land. And you know, we did get on our knees with the law after having the help.
Nothing wrong with that advice. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, Clive, again. As always, thank you. I'm so happy you are on our project. And thank you, Jules, for UCY Network. See you all next week, everybody. You're bound to break.